I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Luke's English Podcast is supported by my sponsors and by donations from listeners. And if you sent me a donation during the month of December, I would just like to say thank you very much indeed. So here we go. Thank you very much indeed. Donating really helps me not just pay for things like podcast hosting and recording equipment. It's also the most sincere way that you can say thank you for my work, and I appreciate it very much. I also receive support from sponsorship, and the sponsor for this episode is iTalki. And if your New Year's resolution is to really work on your English, then you should get some one-to-one lessons with iTalki, because that's a great way to put your best foot forward and really give your English fluency a boost at the beginning of the year. And because you listen to this podcast, iTalki are offering you a free lesson. To get that offer and for more information, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, folks. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. Happy New Year, first of all. It's 2018. Happy New Year. I hope that you had a good one. A good New Year's Eve, wherever you are, however you chose to celebrate it, whether you went out for a party or you saw some fireworks or something, or you simply chose to stay in and just read a good book on your own or something, whatever you did, I hope that you enjoyed it and that you're now ready to get stuck into 2018 with some positivity, determination, and some hope in your heart, even if you are still recovering from your night of celebrations on New Year's Eve. Here's the first episode of Luke's English Podcast in 2018. This is episode number 502. And I've chosen to make this a personal episode of the podcast. Our baby daughter has finally arrived. She's absolutely adorable. But of course, I would say that because she's my daughter. And my wife and I both feel extremely lucky, very grateful and proud. And I tweeted about this and I put a post on Facebook and also wrote something in the comments section on the website just to let my listeners know, because I feel that quite a lot of you were keen to get updates on this situation since you've been following this news since I talked about it first in episode 474, when I said that my wife was pregnant and that we were going to have a baby. So I did tweet about it when the baby was born on Boxing Day on the 26th of December. I tweeted about it, and this is what I wrote on Facebook, Twitter, and on the website. I said, "Good news, our baby daughter was born yesterday on Boxing Day. She's doing well, and so is her mum. We're delighted and a bit exhausted. I expect there'll be a pause in the podcast for a little while, but Luke's English Podcast will be back soon. Happy New Year, and cheers, everyone. Baby emoji, champagne emoji, heart emoji." And the response I got was amazing to me. Hundreds of people wrote lovely messages of congratulation, and the post got over 1,000 likes on Facebook, which is quite a lot in my experience. So I'd like to say thank you very much for the lovely messages that have been sent to me on social media and on the website. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you and sweet of you. Now, I was wondering whether I would talk about this, meaning, the birth of the baby. I was wondering whether I'd talk about this on the podcast. After all, this is a podcast which is ostensibly about learning English, and it's not about all the details of my personal life. That's the idea anyway, although quite a lot of the time it does drift into me kind of sharing things about my life. But the main purpose of this is to help you learn English. And I don't necessarily want this podcast to become some sort of reality show, and it won't be. But I have decided that perhaps I should talk about this very personal experience here on the podcast in at least one episode, and let me explain why. So, just the other day, on my way home from the hospital, just a couple of days after the baby was born, I was listening on the bus, I was listening to Ollie Richards' podcast. That's I Will Teach You a Language, the I Will Teach You a Language podcast. And I was listening to an episode of that. My wife was still in the hospital with our brand new daughter, and I was going back to our flat to tidy it up, to wash some baby clothes, to warm the place up, and to prepare it for the arrival of the baby and my wife, but also to get the place ready for my parents and my brother, who would be visiting a couple of days after. So it would be the first time our daughter had come home, having spent the first few days of her life in a room in the maternity ward in hospital, in safe surroundings, with midwives and nurses available around the clock, with all the care that she needed. And so I suddenly became aware, much more intensely aware, I should say, that I needed to make our flat a proper nest for this little creature to be comfortable, warm and safe. And I was aware of the importance of this before, of course. And we'd already done a lot of things to get the flat ready. My wife's nesting instinct, as they call it, had kicked in months before, but mine was only really properly kicking in now as the baby had arrived. So I was heading back, leaving the two girls in the hospital ward, which was the whole world as far as the baby was concerned. And I was feeling pretty raw and having, you know, gone through lots of emotions over the previous couple of days, having a virtually sleepless night on the first night. You know how it is. And I decided on my way home to listen to something, and I picked an episode of the I Will Teach You a Language podcast with Ollie Richards, the one featuring a fascinating interview with Stephen Krashen. Stephen Krashen is a celebrated linguist, and he is the guy behind the language acquisition theory, which is a very influential theory of how people learn languages. Now, if any language teacher, certainly English teachers out there, will be aware of Stephen Krashen, because he's a very influential person, and he's kind of, the things he's written about have informed the way that we understand people learn languages, and also have contributed so much to the way that we teach English as a foreign language. So it was very interesting to listen to Ollie interviewing Stephen Krashen. And they were talking about how people learn languages. And Stephen Krashen was giving the benefit of his extensive experience and research into the subject. He's been searching for the answer to this question for years. How do we learn languages? And also, what are the best habits that we can adopt as language learners? And also, what can language teachers do to help people learn languages? He's very convinced, he's absolutely convinced, in fact, that he has the answer to those questions. And it's all to do with comprehensible input, which means basically exposing yourself to lots and lots of English, in this case, that you can mostly understand and that is motivating to listen to. And that if you consume enough comprehensible input, that this is how you take on language. This is how you acquire language. This is the absolutely vital part of the process. He was particularly enthusiastic about stories, about listening to stories, about listening to people's stories in the target language. And he was enthusiastic about the fact that you need to search for interesting stories. You need to try and find voices that you can listen to, because this is vital in your acquisition of language. I suppose that those of you who are committed to listening to this podcast, you know this already, because that's probably what you're doing. You listen to this podcast specifically for that reason, because you've I guess you find that I talk in this personal way and that helps you learn English. The advice that he was giving on the podcast was search for interesting stories, listen to people telling stories, and find stories in which you want to know what happens next, and find stories that you're sort of personally invested in some way. And he was very convincing about it. You can listen to that interview, by the way, on Ollie's podcast. It's the I Will Teach You a Language podcast, episode 220. You can listen to it yourself if you'd like to. And in my sleep-deprived and emotional state on the bus, I felt totally open to what he was saying, and it struck me as being so true. And I thought of some of my best English lessons that I've taught in my career, and I realized that many of them included stories. Not just stories in textbooks and stuff, but also stories about personal experiences that I'd had and that I've told my students and that I've converted into lessons. And, you know, for example, telling the students a personal story and making it funny, and having them try to retell the story, write it down, maybe test each other on the details of the story, and then creatively think of ways to continue the story with their own ideas, and giving them chances to tell their own similar stories and correcting their language as they go, that they've always been really great lessons in my experience. And then I thought of the times that I've told stories on this podcast, like, for example, traveling experiences with my wife in many cases, or episodes of The Lion Game, where I'm telling stories with my friends and you have to try and work out if the stories are true or not. I really like those episodes. I think that my audience like those episodes too, for the most part. And then I thought about this episode, which I felt I had to do, trying to explain what it's like to bring a child into the world. I felt I had to do that because, just mainly because of the responses that I've had from you, the audience, that so many of you have asked me about it and have mentioned it and things like that. So trying to explain what it's like to bring a child into the world. And I thought, well, what I can do is I'll just try and tell it like a story, starting from the pregnancy and then going through the different stages of what happened and how they felt. And I thought that might be a good way to kind of kill two birds with one stone, kind of give people some information about this experience and also make it an interesting language learning opportunity. And then I started preparing some notes for it. I was just sitting on the sofa and writing down some ideas. And I asked my wife to help me with some ideas. She started kind of telling me what it was like for her. And then I thought to myself, well, why not I just interview her about the experience? Because after all, she's the one who did most of the work. So why don't I just ask her to tell her story and we can talk about it together? And I've never had my wife on the podcast before, as you know. And I've talked about my reasons for that. But then it just made sense for her to be in this episode. Because, as I said, she's the one who really did all the work in this birth. And I suggested it, and she seemed up for talking about it. And so I thought, well, why not just let her tell the story with me? So that's what you're going to hear. My wife and me, two proud parents, describing the birth of their first child. And I hope that you find it interesting and that it's not too cheesy or sentimental or anything like that. So we're going to start start at the beginning. Not the moment of conception. We won't be talking about that, of course. Ha ha ha. But we will start somewhere during the pregnancy, and we'll try and tell you our experience from then until now. At this point, we are about a week after the baby was born. And I'm looking at her right now. She's just been fed and changed, and she's half asleep and looking very satisfied with herself. She's got like a little smile on her face, and she looks extremely cute and adorable. And it's all still a bit unreal for us now. So hopefully this will be an engaging story, an engaging thing to listen to that will help you learn English according to Stephen Krashen's theory. And remember that you can listen to the episodes called Becoming a Dad, which I recorded with Ben and Andy. And that's where you will find vocabulary explanations for many of the words and phrases relating to this subject that you will hear in this conversation. Hopefully this will also just get across to you the weird and wonderful mix of feelings and emotions that are involved in what is a very significant moment in anyone's life, in this case, mine and my wife's, and of course, our daughter's. So here we go. Can you just speak into the mic so I get a level?
You're doing a sound check?
I'm doing a sound check. What do you normally do for a sound check?
You check the sound. Okay, 1, 2, 1, 2.
That's right. Go on then, say 1, 2, 1, 2.
1, 2, 1, 2.
Keep going. You can count.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can count.
even though you're French, you can count.
Yeah. Am I going to be the funniest guest on your podcast?
I don't know. Only the listeners can decide.
With all the comedians you interviewed, I may get the award of the funniest.
Don't get carried away. Don't count your chickens.
All right.
All right. So why have you never been on my podcast before?
Because you didn't want to.
Oh, I didn't want to. Really? Is that it? That I've just sort of, because I'm a patriarch.
You hid me.
I hid it, yeah. What's the reason why? Is it because I have hidden you away from the world because I'm some sort of overbearing tyrant of a husband, some kind of patriarch who says, no, the wife's job is to stay in the kitchen silently or in the bedroom. Why not?
I'd say you value your privacy. Mm-hmm. You give away so much about yourself that you're entitled to keep some stuff for yourself, and me including.
You included.
You see, I'm going to make mistakes.
You might make mistakes, but it doesn't matter.
And also because I'm a foreigner.
Uh-huh. What difference does that make?
I think your listeners want to listen to native people.
Real British English.
Exactly.
Yeah, but your English is good enough.
Yeah, but I'm like them. I'm a learner.
Really?
Yeah.
We're all learners, really, aren't we?
Yeah, okay, but you know what I mean. I make mistakes. I'm not bilingual. Even if my English is not too bad, mm-hmm. I think they want to hear nice accents, no mistakes. It's how they learn the best.
Yeah, but you've got a nice accent and you don't make many mistakes. And anyway, I've always said, you know, I've said so many times that... these things aren't as important as people think. And I've had, you know, non-native speakers on this podcast before. I remember there was a period where I had quite a few non-native speakers in a row. I had a few friends of mine who I think were French comedians in a row. And I got one or two messages, do you remember? From just one or two people said, I think that... it would be better if your podcast
had
only native speakers.
Yes, I remember very well. That's why I'm saying that.
Okay.
Just you have to please your audience as well.
Yeah, so. But, you know, again, I think you could be an example, though, of, you know, someone who's learnt English. And it just goes to show that just because you're not a native in the language, it doesn't matter, really, that everyone has a right to
have their voice. Yeah, but then they may think you're a bad teacher. Because I make lots of mistakes. They may think, oh my God, they've been living together for how many years? And she still makes lots of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's going to have a bad impact on you.
Do you think you've learned any English from me?
Yeah, a lot. You remember my level when we met?
It wasn't bad.
Yeah, but it was less good than it is today.
Uh-huh. Okay.
No?
No, I remember doing some IELTS test with you.
Yeah.
And you got something like a C1 in that. So I think you started out pretty good.
Yeah, but
it's more that I haven't hindered your English.
No, it's just like I was really shy at the beginning to talk. You remember when I was in Paris and you were in London? I was afraid to talk to you on Skype. Because I wasn't sure I could understand everything or I could express myself quite clearly, but then it improved.
Yeah, you were also scared of making telephone calls.
Yeah, definitely.
If it was a booking for a restaurant or something, or a taxi, you'd give me the telephone. And I had to do it.
Yes, but sometimes when I deal with in my professional for my job,
yeah,
and I speak to people in the States or in the UK, yeah, I still have this little fear of not understanding everything.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the accent. When I call London, that's fine. When it's outside of London, or in the States sometimes, it just gets a while before I acclimatate my ear to the accent. I can't say that, right?
When you get used to it. It takes a while to get used to the accent. Yeah, oh, I would say to get used to it. No, that's great. To what did you say to... Well, we do say to acclimatise. To acclimatise means to get used to the climate, but that's normally for things like weather. You know, like if you go to...
just because in French we say acclimaté. That's why, you know.
Right.
You get used to the climate around you, and it's not necessarily the weather climate. It's like... the environment.
Anything. It could be like the way
people... Sometimes you think I'm clever in English just because I translate like French word to English. Sometimes it works and sometimes it's a disaster.
That's right. Well, not a disaster. Okay. Well, anyway, it's nice to have you on the podcast after all this time. And it feels like it's become kind of blown up. I mean, exaggerated, the fact that I haven't had you on the podcast. I just haven't had you on the podcast, and it's not been for any particularly big reason. It's more just, as you said, I just always thought that I would draw certain lines in terms of privacy, because as you said, I have revealed lots of things about myself and talked about personal things, and there's good reason for that, because I think it makes the content more engaging to listen to. You know, when you feel there's a person behind the words, it makes it perhaps more interesting to hear. And so that's always what I've done until now, obviously. Because now here you are on the podcast.
Just because I've become the mother of your child?
Yeah, that's it. your voice is only valid in the sense that you're the mother of my child.
Okay,
that's
right.
That's the only reason why I would have you on here. Why have I asked you to be on this particular episode? Was I planning to do this?
I don't know. Tell us.
Well, no, I wasn't really. We were just sitting here on the sofa. Our daughter's... sleeping in the cot over there, sleeping, thank goodness.
Yes, she's quite good.
Yeah, isn't that funny though, that parents, we bring a child into the world and then we just want them to sleep.
Yeah, true. But
so what was happening is that we were sitting here and I was planning this episode of the podcast, and I was kind of saying to you, oh, you know, I need to try and write down some notes to help me remember what happened during the pregnancy and the run-up to the birth and the birth itself and the immediate few days afterwards, because that's the story I'm trying to tell. And I was sitting here thinking, well, you know, and I started asking you questions, right? I started saying, well, how was the pregnancy for you and things like that? And you started talking about it. And I said, why don't I just have you on the podcast talking about it? Because I think this is... You've got more things to say about this than I do. You're the one who did most of the work.
Thank you for acknowledging that.
So perhaps I can just ask you a few questions about it. So how was the pregnancy for you then?
It was great.
Really?
It went really well.
Mm-hmm.
I think from the very first beginning.
from the very first beginning. Not just from the beginning. Not from the first beginning, but from the very first beginning.
A piss, but I can't.
Well, yes, you can say that. I just find it funny that you always do.
Just emphasizes like the fact that immediately from the beginning it went well,
mm-hmm.
and we traveled to Japan when I was like what, 2 or 3 weeks pregnant,
and
we kept traveling this summer, and I worked during all the pregnancy, and I feel this pregnancy wasn't something which prevented us from doing anything.
No.
And it went really well.
It prevented you from doing a few things that you love doing, though.
Like?
Eating sushi.
Yes, true. But, I mean, it's not such a big deal. I mean, you can... It's not as if you have to stay in bed and not go to work.
Right.
Or you do like...
Unless you work in a sushi tasting factory.
It would be difficult. No, I mean, my job doesn't require much physical exercise. I would have been like in a job like working. More demanding physically.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been another story, but that wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I think this pregnancy... was great and blissful.
Ah, blissful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so didn't you find it uncomfortable? Didn't it get more and more uncomfortable the more and more pregnant you became?
Yes, sometimes, especially at night. You know, not being able to sleep on the belly or sometimes on the back for too long because it was heavy, the weight. But it's minor, what can I say, minor...
And a minor inconvenience.
Voilà, minor inconvenience. Because I know some women go through way more difficult pregnancies than I was.
Yeah, than you did.
Than I did. Whatever. Oh, my God.
No, don't. You're very modest about your English. You're obviously very articulate.
Mm.
Yeah, you are. And you learnt it all from me. No, you didn't. You didn't. Mm. You didn't.
It's going to have a bad impact on you, this episode.
This is going to have a bad impact on me. Why? Because they're going to think that you're...
You can't speak English properly.
No, they're not. No, people are going to like your English, I predict. Okay, so, yeah, relatively...
What do you think?
I think you handled it brilliantly. That's what I think. I think that you handled it very well.
I think my mood was great.
Yeah, it was.
It was better than it normally, no?
Yeah, because normally, oh, I don't know.
We hear all these stories about like mood swings and like women getting a bit, having a surge of hormones.
Right.
But I felt I was quite balanced during all the pregnancy.
In fact, you were, as you said,
more balanced.
Even more balanced than normal. And you said that's because you were carrying a piece of me inside of you, which kind of gave you this sort of balanced, calm...
Okay, don't give yourself too much credit.
I'm just reporting what you said.
No, it's true, because I think you're calm. You're calmer than me. And also because when you carry, like, a little baby, you want the best for your baby. And I think it's also shuffle your priorities. And... Okay, it kind of sounds like a cliche, but carrying life and a baby puts things in perspective, and you're not going to be angry with certain things because it doesn't matter as much as it did before.
What kind of things are you talking
about? I don't
know,
like at work I would have been like more pissed off with some people or some clients. And just you think about carrying a baby and you're going to become a parent, and there are things which are more important. You just think, I want my baby to be healthy, I hope there is no problem, and you have minor like disagreement with people, and at the end of the day it's not that important. Yeah. So you relativize.
You put things in perspective.
Yeah
Okay, so does that include things at home that normally you would have been annoyed
with? Yeah, I would have killed you for things,
like,
normally.
Like what?
Like, I don't know, like not doing the washing up or leaving stuff in the flat or whatever.
Okay.
No, you've been great during this pregnancy.
Okay, oh, good.
It was awesome.
Just during the pregnancy?
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean, okay.
You were really supportive. And it's also a part of the reason I was so peaceful. Just because you were by my side.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, that's like the cliche moment.
Yeah, okay. I hope this does... I hope what people want to hear is the difficult things. They want to hear about the struggle. They don't want to hear all of these platitudes.
Really? Why?
I don't know. Don't you think that if you were listening...
I don't know. I like hearing nice things because we heard so many negative things about pregnancy. Are you going to be sleep deprived? Or it's going to be difficult? Or sometimes your couple is going to be in struggle? I don't want to hear this kind of things. Mm-hmm. I just want to hear positive things, and because it gives me faith.
Don't you think that people might find it a bit sickening to hear us talking about how wonderful it all was?
Yeah, but it was just a pregnancy. I didn't say like motherhood is going to be like that easy.
We don't know.
And I'm sure you will have occasions to talk to your listeners about struggling as a parent.
Yes, I expect so.
Yeah. Of course I could complain about like pain I had like sometimes in my ribs, you know, when the baby was too high, it was pushing my ribs and it was really uncomfortable. But it's overall, when you see the bigger picture, it was great.
Yeah. Okay. Good. You should be on my podcast more often. You're a lot more articulate than I am. So the due date for this baby was the 21st of December.
Yeah,
the
winter solstice.
Okay. And did the baby actually arrive on time as expected?
No, she didn't. She arrived on the 26th, 5 days late. But luckily, she arrived by herself.
What? There wasn't another baby in there?
No, they were supposed to induce me. The technical terms to make the birth happen with chemicals.
Mm.
I don't know if it's like a good definition.
Sounds good to me. Make the birth happen with chemicals. They were going to induce you if the baby was too...
was the last day. The 26 was the limit. After we couldn't let her inside because she reached the limit,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it. So they decided to induce me on the 26th during the day. And luckily...
That was the plan.
That was the plan.
We went in on the 21st, it being the due date, and they said, well, you're not, you know, giving birth yet, and...
Come back the 23rd.
Come back on the 23rd, and we'll scan you again,
right,
and we'll check the contractions and check all the other things.
Yeah.
And then
we went on Christmas Day.
And so, well, yeah, we came back on the 23rd, same story. Yeah. Like, well,
25th.
No. Yeah, and then we came back again on the 25th, and they had told us the 26th would be the last day, and that if the birth wasn't happening naturally by then, that they would start the inducing process, which we didn't want that to happen, did we?
No.
Why not?
Because you never know, it's not very reassuring when they're going to say, we're going to induce you and force the baby to arrive.
Mm.
Ideally, you would prefer the baby to arrive by itself.
Okay.
You know, naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because this pregnancy was so natural. You want the end also to be natural, not to force. Because I think it's a trauma for the baby as well, the birth in itself.
Yeah.
So plus you add extra, you know, the chemicals, the forcing. Just not very natural.
I'm sure a lot of women have to be induced, though, and that's probably fine in the end.
You know how much I was scared of the pain, so I thought it would be... I heard it was more painful to be induced.
Really?
Mm.
Oh, okay. So it's for purely selfish reasons.
Not selfish, I've just said it's also a trauma for the baby.
Okay, yeah, fair.
Are you listening what I'm saying, or...?
Okay, so then the 25th, it being Christmas Day, we spent mm-hmm. the day sitting here on the sofa binge-watching Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Okay, Downton Abbey. Did that help?
I thought it was quite relaxing.
Yeah.
Because it's so full of good sentiments, this TV show.
It is. It's a bit sort of cheesy, a bit cheesy, a bit shallow, nothing really bad things happen in the show, but somehow everything works out all right.
It's always dealt in a superficial manner with a good, happy ending at the end.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think it's good for the listeners because English is quite good in this show. No?
Yeah, yeah, it's certainly clear. You get two types of English. There's the kind of posh English of the... Listeners, we're talking about the TV show Downton Abbey, which you're probably aware of because it's, I think, one of the most popular British TV shows in the world these days. And we hadn't watched it until about 2 weeks ago when we decided to start watching it on Netflix, just because we thought we would watch something kind of not very challenging and a bit fun. And we'd watched The Crown, that was it.
Yeah.
We watched The Crown, which is an interesting sort of portrait of the royal family and the Queen. And we wanted something similar to that, so we started watching Downton Abbey. I'm sure my listeners know about Downton Abbey. It's quite famous everywhere. But yeah, it's set sort of just about 100 years ago. And there's the upstairs and downstairs in this old country manor, the aristocratic family, and then the staff who serve that family. And so you get several types of English. You've got the posh, heightened, old-fashioned RP of the aristocrats, and then you have the mostly Yorkshire accents of the staff who serve them. But
sometimes it's difficult to understand.
Which ones do you find more difficult?
The cook.
The cook. Mrs. What's it called?
Patmore.
Mrs. Patmore, the cook.
Yeah.
Most of the staff, depending on the class level, because it seems even in the
staff, there is different.
There's a hierarchy within the staff as well.
So Carson, the butler, is very articulate.
Very well spoken.
Yeah. And the cooks, they're more, it's more difficult for me to get it.
You could say it's that they're more colloquial or something. Okay, colloquial. So yeah, the Lord himself, Lord Grantham, and his family speak of heightened posh RP, but also the butler speaks in a similar style as well, this very kind of posh accent. But yeah, the cooks, who I think are the lowest level in the house, they speak with quite strong Yorkshire accents.
Can you give us an example?
I don't know. Something like that, isn't it? Oh, Mrs. Patmore, where have you put them cakes? You know, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, this one, Ben.
Oh, thanks. All right, so we binged watched Downton Abbey, which was quite nice, and you know, tried to have a relaxing time. But then your contractions did start on Christmas Day, didn't they?
Yeah, on the 25th. So we thought it would be like a Christmas baby coming, but at the hospital they told us just go walking and come back later when it's more advanced.
So on the afternoon of the 25th, we went for a bit of a walk, and you were having a few contractions, but they weren't too painful.
No.
You were still able to walk, but it was just a bit uncomfortable. And so we continued our Christmas Day with some nice dinner and continued binge-watching Downton Abbey, which was nice. And you were drinking this raspberry leaf tea, which is supposed to help with the birth somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. There are lots of beliefs with, like, raspberry tea, it helps the labor to make it like quicker and less painful. Also eating dates, I don't know if it's true, but it doesn't hurt.
Yeah,
so
the raspberry tea is, well,
it's a bit tasteless though.
Yeah,
so it's like drinking hot water. So
okay,
but considering the birth went well,
Maybe it worked. And then we went to bed about midnight on Christmas Day after having given
it. Yeah,
midnight or something. And about half an hour later, you woke me up saying, I think my waters have broken.
I had like first one or two contractions, and one which was really a painful one, like a pain I hadn't experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a few minutes after, I think my water broke, and I told you, okay, let's go.
Yeah, you woke me up and said, my water's broken. I was like, oh, what was my reaction? Because I didn't do the Hollywood movie, like, right, you know, the cliche in the movies is that when the woman's water breaks, that it's complete chaos and there's a high-speed taxi journey or car journey to the hospital. It wasn't quite like that.
They make it really more dramatic than it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, I think you were quite excited, but also very calm, and you managed it quite well. Mm-hmm. We got up, we got ready, you ordered an Uber, and we went to the hospital, and in 15 minutes we were there.
Yeah, that's right. It was quite lucky,
brilliant.
Quite lucky that it happened on Christmas night.
Yeah, I mean, there was nobody, no traffic.
No cars on the roads at all. But I was impressed by you that you managed to get to the bath before your water broke. Which is really impressive. Like, how did you? I don't know how you managed
that.
It's
not as if we were living in such a big apartment. So
no, it's not that far. But still, like you said to me, "Oh, my waters are broken in bed," and then you said, "I think I can get to the bath."
Yeah,
and I was like, "All right, go for it." And you managed to get there before it all actually happened.
They told me at the hospital it didn't fully break. I don't know how you said there was like, it's as if like you have a hole in the pocket, so you have a bit of a drip.
Yeah, like a trickle or a drip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have more coming, so, and then at the hospital. Apparently there are two membranes, and the first one was broken, but the second one, they broke it at the hospital.
Ah.
So it wasn't fully...
Out. Okay.
Let's spare the details.
Yeah, let's not try and avoid some of the specific details. Yeah. So we got to the hospital, and what happened?
We had the check, so it was confirmed like the water was broken a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we had the monitoring to check the heartbeat of the baby and to check also the rhythm of the contractions. And again, to say, okay, go for a walk for 40 minutes in the hospital.
That's right.
So, and come back at 3:30, and maybe we'll give you the epidural. So we went, you and me, in the corridors at night in the hospital with nobody in there, which was actually quite nice because I was such in pain. and nobody could see me. We were alone in the hospital.
Yeah, you were so in pain.
Yeah, it was a bit painful.
In such pain.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Just a little correction for your English there. Not that you really need it, but
thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, that was quite. Quite weird walking around these deserted corridors with you. But yeah, the contractions were really coming in quite regularly at that point. Maybe one every couple of minutes.
And it was like less than that. I felt it was one every 30 seconds.
Really? And every time it happened, you had to grab my arm.
Yeah.
And so this is all I could do, really. It was just be there walking with you. And to every time the contractions began, your hand would start flailing in the air, and I'd have to put my hand there, and you'd grab my arm and squeeze my arm really tight. And there wasn't much more I could do than that.
Yeah, that was very useful to be able to just express, to have something to
hold.
Crush.
Yeah.
No, me. It's like you pass the pain to someone else in a way.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Okay, and then what? Then?
And then we came back at 3:30, just on time, because I couldn't stand it anymore. And they said, okay, you're going to go to the bathroom and we're going to put the epidural. So you want to explain what the epidural is?
I think I have explained an epidural before, okay. But just a quick reminder, that's basically a sort of a nerve blocker, which is... given with a large needle in the spine, and it's like a big injection in the spine, and they inject this nerve blocker, which basically reduces the sensation that you have in the uterus and cervix and all that stuff, those areas, so that it's not painful anymore. And so from my point of view, what was happening then is that I was, you know, trying to keep calm. But inside, I was feeling very nervous and a lot of sort of, it's hard to say, just stress and nerves and excitement. And, you know, like the way you feel before any big occasion, like, for example, if you've got a big job interview or if you've got a big speech that you have to do or a big comedy gig or something like that. It seemed in recent years, I've just experienced this feeling so many times in so many different scenarios, you know, being on stage or teaching a particular class or something like that and feeling that feeling. So it's something I'm quite used to. But this one was something I hadn't felt before, because this was kind of like, wow, this is a really big moment in my life. And I was trying not to think about it too much, because if I thought about it too much, it became a bit overwhelming, just the significance and also the potential danger, because it's a pretty risky thing for your wife to go through, or for any woman to go through, you know, a childbirth. And it's a serious thing, and I knew that it could cause you lots of pain and all that sort of thing. So, you know, I was trying to just stay calm. And I also thought that for you, I needed to stay calm, because if I was getting all stressed out, that would stress you out. So it's just a case of like just keeping composed and being kind of minimal. If I can compare it to playing music in a band, which is a strange comparison, but when you're playing music in a band, sometimes the best thing that you can do when you're playing music with other people is just not really do much, do the minimum and just allow the other musicians to be to take the what am I trying to say? Our daughter just made a noise. But when you're playing in a band, you kind of do less and you allow other musicians to come forward, for example, the guitarists or the singer. And if you're the drummer, for example, you just pull it back and just do the absolute minimum and provide a sort of steady foundation for the other musicians to work from.
So and you were my drummer?
It felt like I was drumming in this band and that instead of doing lots of drum rolls and fancy things and trying to steal the show, I was just providing like this steady beat.
To be honest, I don't know how you could have stolen the show, but
no, I couldn't. Well, that's the point, that if a drummer attempts to steal the show, he just ruins the show, because that, you know, it doesn't work, because the singer has to be the one at the front or the lead guitarist or something. And so it's a strange comparison, but you know what I mean, don't you? So my job was to just try and keep calm and try and not get in the way, mm-hmm. but at the same time give you the support you needed.
No, but that was great. You stayed by my side and it was really comforting and relaxing.
And you crushed my arm in your hand.
Yes.
The scary moment, there was a scary moment when they put the epidural in, because it's quite a large needle. I didn't want you to look at the needle as well.
No,
so I was trying to distract your attention away from that. So you were then at that point in the birth room on the bed. And whenever the contractions hit you, I don't know if you remember this, but your body,
you
double up in pain. Mm. You'd like bend over in pain. You close your eyes and I'd lose you for the duration of the contraction. You know, you were just gone. And or you know, you would just be holding my arm. And other than that, just closed eyes and just bent over. And so I was trying, you know, I was just sort of thinking, oh, that must be really painful, but I'll just let her get through it. And I was hopefully trying to remind you to breathe deeply and things like that, but you were doing most of that yourself. But then when it came time for them to put the epidural in, I thought they would ask me to leave the room, because I think some guys in these moments faint. And they, you know, I'd been told that by someone, I can't remember who, that I would be asked to leave the room when the epidural was put in, because they don't want to have to deal with the father who is fainting, you know. But they did it with me there. And
no, they were great.
And so the guy was waiting for your contractions to stop so that he could put the epidural in between the contractions.
But they were so close to each other.
Yeah, your contractions were so regular and so quick. And I just knew that the contraction was going to come while he was putting the needle in. I could just tell because I knew the rhythm of it. And so, I was waiting and he was putting the needle in. And of course, a contraction arrived while he was putting the needle in. And this is important because your body posture had to be right for them to get the epidural into the right part of your spine.
Yeah.
And so it involved you sitting, bending over with your shoulders rounded and all this kind of stuff. And of course, the contraction arrived while he was doing it. But you know, I could see the pain like surging through your body, but you managed to stay in the same position. So I was really proud of you and very impressed by the way you managed it. And then after the epidural went in,
that was awesome.
Well, before it took effect,
20 minutes.
Before it was awesome, you lay down again on the bed with the epidural going into your system. And there was a moment there where you started to drift off. Mm. And all the time, because they had you hooked up to the machines and stuff, we could hear the baby's heartbeat in your uterus. And so you could hear the heartbeat going.
And it was slowing down.
And it was slowing down. And normally it was around about, what, 130 or something?
Between 140 and 160.
Okay.
I don't know how low it dropped, but yeah.
But it was dropping down. Yeah. It dropped down into double figures. It was going down into like really low.
So they were concerned.
I was kind of, it was just the two of us in the room and your eyes closed and you drifted away. And then the baby's heartbeat started dropping quite dramatically. And I was sitting there going, what shall I do? And in my head, I thought, well, I don't want to annoy the nurses and midwives. You know, that's what I was thinking. I don't want to be annoying by asking them for help. And then I thought, what? Don't be ridiculous. And so I pressed the red button immediately, the panic button. And they came in. And I don't know what they did, but they fiddled with the stuff. Yeah. And then you came back to life. Yeah. And the baby's heartbeat came back up. Yeah. What was that? What happened?
Yeah, I don't know. I remember, you know, it's like when you're about to fall asleep and you feel yourself going away. You know, you hear the sound around you, but you know you slide into the sleep. I don't know if you can say that.
Yeah, that's good. You started drifting away.
Okay, drifting away. I felt it. It's like falling asleep, really. But then you talked to me and I think you shook me or something.
I didn't realize I slapped you about the face. No, I didn't.
I would have known.
I didn't.
No,
really.
I remember you just talked to me I think you shook me or something.
I don't know. I can't remember.
But then they came back and they talked to me and they said that the baby dropped, her heart dropped a bit. And they were slightly concerned because it could have been an emergency C-section if the baby couldn't recover. And I think 1 minute after, she recovered and I was stable. And so everything was fine.
So I saved your life and I saved the life, yes, of our daughter. I was the real hero.
Yeah, you are a superhero.
No, I'm not at all. It's just a joke. I quite like the idea that I shook you.
No, man,
darling,
it wasn't as dramatic as Die Hard or whatever.
No.
But I remember you were next to me and you spoke to me and I heard your voice. And it brought me back.
Okay. Is there a scene in Die Hard where there's a pregnant woman?
No, I don't know.
Birth?
I said Die Hard because everything is dramatic in Die Hard.
Right, I see. You imagine know? Bruce Willis.
Yeah, exactly. Just
Bruce Willis in a building, like helping a woman give birth. I don't. That was one of the deleted scenes, apparently. But I know what you're talking about. Okay, and
you're maybe the only one.
Maybe, quite possibly. And then you felt you came back to life when the epidural took effect. Now, some women choose not to have an epidural.
Wow, they're so brave.
Yeah, why would they choose not to have one?
Because it has a downside of epidural. It's a chemical. You have some secondary effect sometimes. You can be paralyzed. But it's like really rare, but it can happen. And also the same story. It's like a chemical, you're numb. Some women prefer like just having a totally natural birth, which seems to me very brave considering like I couldn't cope just with the pain at the beginning. So I can't imagine having stayed 12 hours with this pain. So yeah, it's a personal choice.
Okay. All right then. And so you felt fine.
That was amazing. Then we stayed, 6 hours in the birth room together, trying to sleep in the dark, and they were checking on me every hour. That was quite nice, this part.
Yeah.
From 3 or 4 to 9 or 10.
It was quite strange, though, too, for me, because we were sitting in this room. I could hear the baby's heartbeat all the time. There were different sounds. Like, every now and then, there was like a beep, 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 beep noise. And I was like, what's that? What's going on?
Oh, yeah, at some point, there was a problem with the epidural. They lost the signal or something.
Yeah, and other things, little noises and buzzing sounds and things. And also, the air in the room wasn't very nice.
There was this noise.
To me, it felt like we were on a transatlantic flight. It felt like
you told me that. I remember.
It felt like we were in an aeroplane.
I find it quite just not comfortable, because comfortable is not really the word, but I thought it would be different, and it was actually quiet, nice. Maybe it would have been different during the day, because it was at night. We were supposed to get some rest, and I find it a bit like restful.
Yeah, and also it happened during the Christmas holiday.
Yeah, so
we may, you know,
they only had 2 babies apparently born that night.
Really?
They told me,
okay,
including ours.
So the vibe generally on the maternity ward was quite calm and relaxed, thankfully. And then suddenly it was showtime.
Yeah, so we were waiting for the cervix to open fully. So you have centimeters. It's supposed to be 1 centimeter per hour. I think it went a bit faster and sometimes it went a bit slower. So there is no really rule. And around 9 o'clock, it was open. So she was supposed to come out, but she was really high still. Yeah. She wasn't engaged in the cervix.
Right.
Normally the head of the baby is getting engaged in the cervix. And it's a time where you know it's really imminent.
Yeah.
But this one, she was stuck quite high. And they said my contractions were not efficient enough. Yeah, weird things to...
Just not good enough.
Exactly.
Must try harder.
So they said they would put like a product to intensify the contraction as if it was needed. Mm. And they asked me, I said, I don't know if you said that in a previous podcast, but you regulate the amount of product you give yourself for the epidural. So I had a little pump and I could press every 10 minutes to get my dose as a junkie.
Right.
And I was totally numb. It was fine. And they asked me to stop doing that. And they gave me a product to intensify the contraction.
Right.
So the next 3 hours were not that great because it was painful again.
Yeah, the contraction, the epidural sort of wore off a bit.
Yeah.
And you started to get more intense contractions. And then I noticed that you started to go back into the painful cycle again, like before the epidural had happened. But I'm sure it was like less intense than it would have been if you hadn't had the epidural.
Definitely. So then they gave us 3 hours for the product to
take effect.
take effect. And it was supposed, the contraction was supposed to help the baby go down, because a contraction pushes. Yeah, I haven't finished. A contraction pushes the baby down. So that was the purpose of all this process. So it worked a bit. But at some point, they can't leave you without any... So they broke the water as well. Because I told you there were two membranes. But at some point, they can't leave the baby more than a certain number of hours. They have to deliver the baby. So they said, we're going to try to push. And if it doesn't work, maybe we'll see if we do a C-section. So, and then we started to push.
And for you, the word C-section was the thing, right? You're like, no, I will not have a C-section.
Yeah, because some women prefer having a C-section. You know the expression, too posh to push.
Do I know the expression, too posh to push?
I don't know. It's something quite English.
I do know the expression, too posh to push, but maybe you can explain that one then.
Okay. I think it's in certain classes.
Okay.
So posh, like upper class.
All right.
Some women don't want to go through the process of pushing because they think it's not very... graceful, distinguished, or they don't want to have to go through the pain. So they do the easy way. I don't know if it's easier, having a C-section. So it's not really classy to push. So they have their belly cut and get the baby out.
You can imagine this happening in private hospitals where they can choose exactly what happens.
Yeah, and in Paris, that's exactly what happened. In private hospital, you can choose hospitals. You can choose. In public hospitals, you can't. They do a C-section only if it's necessary. And I don't know, I didn't really feel comfortable of having a C-section, being cut and having a scar. And I don't know, you really, I think, well, actually, I can only speak for myself. I wanted something completely natural and I'm not too posh to push. I did push.
But, you know, you did have an epidural, so.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I'm not criticizing you for it. I totally understand, but, okay. All right. So then it's...
But my push wasn't really efficient, apparently.
Well, first of all, the mention of the C-section kind of basically said, made you go, right, come on, let's do this. And you started to push. And we had a few midwives around.
Yeah,
three of them around you and me there with my arm out, being silent. And at that point for me, they were all encouraging you to push.
Mm-hmm.
And they were giving you all the right words and saying all the right things to try and get you to push. And I was there just standing there like thinking, does anyone even realize I'm here? You know, and it's not about me, but I was there and I was thinking, should I be saying things too? Like, you know, I was thinking, at what point should I be going, come on, baby, push, for Christ's sake, come on, you can do it, you know, do it for Britain, do it for France. instead I was just sort of keeping silent, letting the midwives do the work.
You was a silent force.
That's right. I was just using the force.
Yeah, exactly.
Just sort of silently just
But they were screaming, these women.
Did it help what they were doing?
It was a bit like a prep talk. You know, they were like, I felt like a boxer on the ring and I had my coach saying, okay, you can do it, go. And this was like, I didn't know the midwife could be like that. So they were, you know, it's like, I don't know, sometimes you see the midwives in their bubbly world with babies, everything is beautiful, delicate. And I had this woman who was screaming in my ear, like, you can do this, come on, Mrs. Thompson, you can do that. And I was like, wow, okay, fine. Yeah. So no, that was good. You were... like steady next to me. That was great.
All right. Okay. Good. You tried and you pushed and pushed and nothing.
Yeah.
And then they were like, okay, let's do it again. Let's do it again. Building it up. Okay. Yeah. It's time to push now and push. And you would like get, you know, hold onto the bars at the side of the bed and you were pushing really hard and your face went red and I thought your head was going
to
explode.
Yeah, because you have to block. There are different way of pushing, but this one was blocking your breath. Then pushing when the contraction happens.
Mm.
What I found difficult was you had to push twice on the same contraction, which doesn't really last long. It's like 30 seconds or 45 seconds. So you don't rest for these 45 seconds and you try to give everything. But you're also numb. So that's difficult to know because you don't really have full sensation of what you're doing and what you're experiencing. So you can only believe what they say.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know if they say, okay, that's good, because they try to not discourage you.
Yeah, I you told me that I wasn't allowed to look.
Yeah, no.
I couldn't go round and see you from the front. You didn't want me to do that. Mm. And, you know, I didn't really need to do that either. Mm. And so anyway, I was there by your side. And so I couldn't see what the midwives could see. And they were saying, like, you're nearly there. Come on, you're nearly there.
Yeah, it's I didn't really believe it.
Yeah, I sort of didn't believe it either. I thought, nah, it's bullshit. They're just saying that to make it seem like you're nearly there, just to make you, so that you don't lose hope, just to keep you motivated. And they kept saying this, you know, just a few millimeters now. And then at some point, one of them said, you know, give me your hand. And they took your hand.
We can spare the
details. Yeah, you can spare the details. But anyway, you touched the head of your daughter, and that was quite
and a... Said, oh, she's blonde. And say, what? You can see her? And say, yeah, she's really close. And one more push, and I think the head was out. And then they say, okay, now one shoulder. And I say, what? She's... Because really, you're numb. You don't feel. And imagine, like, expelling a baby from your body.
Yeah.
You might think, especially our baby, who was a bit like chubby.
Was she?
Apparently. I find her perfect, but apparently she was.
Uh-huh.
It's something. And you don't feel it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have this image in your brain of something difficult and painful, and you don't feel anything. So it's hard to believe until you have this little human. You see her and
That's
it makes sense. But
suddenly, after all this pushing and like one massive big final push, and then next thing you know, one of the midwives has produced this it's like an alien at first.
Yeah, it's warm. And
it's an incredibly primal moment where there's all this kind of raw sort of power happening. You pushing, and your head is going bright red, and you're using all the force you can muster, and you're pushing with all your body, and they're screaming, and it's like, you know, and it's very primal and quite frightening, and all this sort of stuff. And then they produced our daughter, and she's kind of like bright pink or purple in color, and her hands and legs dangling down, and the umbilical cord as well. So, like, you know, arms and legs and the umbilical cord hanging down from her. They pull her out, and her legs are dangling down. And she's this odd color, and she's kind of like a bit wet. And it looked like they pulled an alien out of your body.
Yeah.
And, you know, it happens. It's so intense that you have a look at her face, and you can't really look at her quick enough. And they put her on your chest, and it was just, wow, an emotional explosion.
Yeah, that I've never felt that before.
Yeah, you can cry.
No,
you can cry on the podcast.
No, it's so intense. You have this, I don't know, it's what you wait for, right, during 9 months.
Yeah.
For me, this pregnancy went so well that it was a bit unreal. I know she was there, but it went so well. I was accommodating myself with her quite well during the day. I was working, she was there, I knew, we felt her, you spoke to her through my belly, she responded to you by kicking your face, so we knew she existed and she was there. But it does come real only when you see her.
And
it's raw emotions,
and there is this sense that you've crossed a threshold into another sort of part of your life, that some weird psychic natural threshold has been crossed, and then there you are. We went in as two, and then we're three.
Yes.
And she arrived on, they put her on your chest, and I immediately felt I wanted to welcome her and to talk to her and let her hear my voice. And so I wanted to say, you know, I'm going to start crying now too. I wanted to say, you know, oh, hello. oh, well, here you are. It's us. Don't worry. Everything's fine. And I couldn't finish my sentence. I got too overwhelmed by the emotion. I started crying. But it was just, it was a beautiful moment, really.
Yes.
But I was also...
Very unique.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really conscious of that I wanted to do it right and I didn't want to get anything wrong. And after she spent some time on your chest bonding with you, they took her away. They cut the umbilical cord.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me if I wanted to do it. I said, no, it's fine. I could have done it. I could have, but I just thought, no, I don't need to do it. You know, it's... And they then took her over to a little table where they checked her out and checked all of the, you know, all the different
reflexes.
Her reflexes and her vision and all these other things. And they checked her body. Mm. And they asked me to come over there too. So while they were doing that, I was like looking at her. And it's impossible to take it all in. I wanted to check every inch of her body and just to make sure she was all right. And I did. And she seemed completely perfect to me. Because we had been told in the run-up to the birth that she was... a big baby, that's what they'd said, you know, and everyone kept saying, oh, she's a big baby. And so we expected,
because of you,
because of me, because I was I was 4.1 kilograms when I was born,
yes,
which is quite heavy, but I was long, that's what my mum said. I was a long baby because I've got
trying to find excuses.
Right, maybe trying to make it sound nice, but I've got long legs, and I think as a baby I had sort of long legs too.
And she has
Yeah,
I know. Legs and long fingers.
Yeah, I noticed that straight away when I was checking her out. That I was like, "Wow, she's got big hands, long fingers, long legs, and long feet."
Yeah,
and so
she's not chubby; she's long.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. And she weighed in at just under 4 kilograms.
Yes,
which is quite heavy.
Yeah, but she was also like 5 days over the due date.
Mm-hmm.
So she's less than 4 kilos for 5 days of a due date. So, yeah, she's a
well-developed?
Yeah, well-developed baby.
Yeah. In fact, they said when they first saw her, oh, she's like a one-month-old baby.
Bullshit.
What do you mean?
No, she looks like a newborn, right?
Yeah, of course she does.
She's just a bit advanced.
Yeah. And so I suppose you were on the bed there. They were kind of like tending to you as well. And while I was like with the baby, mm-hmm. and they, after they checked the baby, they left her there with me, and then they went to look after you. And so I had a chance to talk to her, and she was crying and she was quite sort of upset. And I just talked to her, and I basically did Luke's English podcast to her.
And immediately, no, that was actually unbelievable, because you started to talk to her and I think she recognized your voice immediately and she calmed down.
Yeah, she did. She sort
of... It was instantly.
She calmed down straight away as I started talking to her. And
just, she was in her comfort zone. I think she just said, oh, okay, I'm outside, but I know this voice and it's reassuring.
Mm.
I'm sure it's what she thought.
I hope so. I hope that's true.
Because you spoke to her so many times for long months, since August, when her hearing was fully developed, around like 25 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
Like twice a day, so I'm sure she recognized your voice. And you had a skin-to-skin with her, and it was really touching.
That's when, I was wearing a shirt, and I unbuttoned the shirt, and they put her onto my chest, and I held her for about an hour, and she fell asleep on me. And that was, wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Just the forming an attachment like that straight away. She'd already done it with you, and then she did it with me. And I feel very lucky that I got to do that. Generally, I just feel that we've been very lucky so far, don't you?
Yes.
She's 1 week old.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's
not
fantastic.
Not just because she's our daughter, but I mean, she's pretty easygoing. She sleeps quite well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she can sleep 6 hours in a row. It's been already, 4 hours she's been sleeping.
Yeah.
She doesn't cry much. Of course she cries. She's a baby and it's a only mean of expression. But she looks nice and relaxed.
Yeah.
So, and calm.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, some of my friends had babies who could cry all day long because they have this kind of colic when you have, like, belly pain.
Mm.
Also because they're stressed, but she looks pretty well.
She does. Oh,
she's waking up.
She's waking up. She's now we're gonna. After saying that she doesn't cry, she's now gonna
exactly.
cry.
Exactly.
You might hear her. There you go. She knows that we're talking about her. She's going to contradict everything we've just been saying now. You're going to hear her crying. So my wife has now got up because she's going to go over and see to the baby. Apparently what you're supposed to do in these situations is not immediately pick her up.
Yeah,
it's been 4 hours, but they say that you should do it in stages. When your baby's crying at night, for example, you go over and first of all you talk to the baby. You don't make contact straight away. You just make sure the baby knows that you're there and you talk to them. And then perhaps you rub the belly or something like that. And here she is. And then you might pick the baby up and sort of rock the baby from side to side in your arms and things like that. And see, you know, try and work out why the baby's crying. And at this age, they seem to cry for just a few reasons, really. Either they've done a poo in their pants or in their nappy. They've, you know, done a number one or a number two and they need changing. Or it means that they are hungry, which is probably what it is. Because this one just... I mean, as soon as she came out and was put on your chest, mm-hmm. you could see she was immediately looking to feed straight away. And I think she did, right? You did feed her straight away.
Yes.
And so it's either they need changing, they need food, or they just need some affection and a bit of attention. And so you pick them up and you rock the baby from side to side and stuff like that. And often that will calm her down. But ultimately what she needs is to be fed.
Yeah, it's been 4 hours and a half. She hasn't had anything.
Yeah, that's right. And so are you worried about anything? Do you have any fears at this point? Because I'm willing to say that I sometimes think about the fears that I have. You know, I tend to dwell on those things. I kind of worry about, oh, you know, is it going to be all right? And is she going to be okay? And are we going to do this correctly? And are we doing all the right things at the right times?
At night, I check if she breathes. She breathes sometimes.
If she's breathing.
Because I don't hear any noise. So I'm just checking because I'm afraid. I have the same fear like every parent. Am I going to be a good mother for her? Is she going to be happy? If she's going to be healthy, you know, I think we all go through these kind of fears and questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so here she is. And it's hard to explain, really. I mean, I don't know if those of you who've had kids out there will know. Those of you who haven't had kids, it might be, you know, difficult to pick up on. It's something like, you have lots of fears and worries, but when the child arrives, the child, as my parents often say, the child brings its own love. So yeah. they bring their own love, which means that somehow that makes it all right, that you kind of fall in love with them instantly, and
yes.
their charm and their innocence and the fact that everything is happening to them for the first time brings so much wonder and joy that kind of makes all the fear and everything else easy to handle possible to handle, because they counterbalance it with so many other positive things that in the end it's worth it. We have been quite lucky again with sleep, because she has been sleeping and we're mm-hmm. on holiday, and so we've got a bit more time and we can sleep a little bit later in the yes. morning and stuff, so that's not a problem. But even if we had, you didn't sleep very well for the first 3 nights, but you were fine. You seemed fine.
At the hospital, I mean, she wasn't sleeping as much as, as long as she does now.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a hospital. You're never really comfortable at the hospital. The only reassuring thing was the panic button. Like in the middle of the night, if I had any question, the first night I think I called the midwife 3 times
mm-hmm.
Because I was like, oh, am I doing it right? And you hear other babies crying.
Yeah.
But when you don't and yours is the only one, you feel like, I'm a bad mother. It's like 3 a.m. and my baby is crying. It's the only one in the aisle of the hospital. And the second night, I thought she was, she stopped breathing for a few seconds. So it worried me. And they said it was totally normal, but it was reassuring. She was around. And yeah, the three first nights, you don't really sleep because it's the first time. And and plus, you were not there the two first nights, so yeah. I was on my own.
Yeah, I'm a bad father.
No, you couldn't. But then you stayed with me the third night, and it was actually quite nice.
Yeah, there wasn't a bed for me to stay in, so I had to, you know, I'm such a great dad that I just sat in a chair all night. No, it was actually quite comfortable. I had another chair to put my feet up on, and I did get some sleep, so it wasn't that bad. But yeah, when she cries, which is usually when, you know, as I've said, she's hungry or whatever, and when I'm changing her nappy, she doesn't like that, because I think I'm a bit rough with her. You know, like she cries and she kicks her legs everywhere, and it's like really difficult to change her nappy.
She does it with me
as well.
She
does it with you too. Yes. But when she's crying for whatever reason, it is quite sort of, the crying goes straight to your, to the core of your soul. You know, somehow that the pain that the baby is experiencing somehow cuts right to the center of you. It's amazing the impact they can have. But also similarly, when you see her smile, that also gets straight to the core of you too, and it's a real joy. One of the emotional moments I had, you know, in the days after she was born, she's a week old at this point, by the way, everyone. So the day, a few days after she was born, we had her in the room. And she was crying, and we were trying to calm her down, because it's very traumatic for the child at the beginning.
Yeah.
If you can imagine, you know, having spent 9 months in the womb, where you don't need to eat, you don't need to breathe. Most of your organs in your body aren't actually working at that point. They're just growing, because the placenta is doing the job of all of them. And, you know, you get all of your nutrition straight through your blood supply. It must be like being a junkie or something. For a child, you know, they just lie in this in this warm womb, and it's all intravenous, and then they get born, and suddenly all the organs have to start working. You know, the lungs, the you know, the liver, the kidneys are all doing their job and everything, and it must be very painful and traumatic. And so, yeah, they cry at the beginning because they're scared and they don't know where they are and they can't see anything. Anyway, so she was crying. And I thought, well, I know, I'll put some music on. So I had my laptop, and we hadn't played her any music up until that point. And she was crying, and I put on Rubber Soul by the Beatles. And the first few bars of Drive My Car by the Beatles came on, and she was mesmerized. You could see it in her face. She was mesmerized, and I realized it was the first time. Not only was it the first time she'd ever heard the Beatles, it was the first time she'd ever heard music outside the womb. We did go to a Rolling Stones gig when you were pregnant, so I don't know if that counts. But outside the womb,
but she was moving a lot
during that show.
During the gig,
yeah. So that was an emotional moment for me. I mean, when it happened, I was welling up, and when I told, I think, my brother about it, I started welling up a few days ago. Now, you know, I feel a bit more stable. But a few days ago, I was getting very emotional just all the time about everything. But I think we're stabilizing now. Maybe at this point, we're in the honeymoon period, darling. You know that this is the kind of honeymoon period. We're in the glow of the new baby, and the challenge might really kick in. In a month's time,
or
you know, when she starts walking, that's going to bring new challenges.
It's not going to be in a month.
It's not going to be a month. No, I know. When she starts talking, when she, you know, when she interacts with other people, when she starts realizing that I don't speak French very well,
you're going to improve. You have no choice.
I'm going to improve. Yeah, and so we've got lots of challenges ahead, including, you know, when she becomes a teenager and all that stuff. But
I think we have time.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Exactly. Let's enjoy the present moment.
Yeah, you have to take it step by step and just take every moment as it comes. Yeah, okay. Thanks for talking to me on the podcast for the first time.
You're welcome.
I think it's gone okay, don't you?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what your listeners are going to think of that.
I can't believe that you had a non-native speaker on your podcast.
And she makes so many mistakes.
I demand, you don't actually, you don't, you really don't. And that's pure modesty, what you're saying and all that stuff. You don't. But it's been good. It's been emotional. And, you know, maybe I'll invite you back on the podcast after I've done another 500 episodes.
Exactly. For the second baby, maybe.
Yeah, perhaps. Because that's, again, that's all you represent to me on the podcast. It's just
exactly.
That's your only role here is just the mother of my children. And that's.
Well, it's not nothing.
No, it's not nothing. I'm just joking, really, of course. But okay, then. What do you want to do now? There's not much you can do. You've got a child to feed. Okay. Thanks for listening, listeners. Do you want to say anything to the people of the world?
I hope you'll enjoy this episode and the many more to come.
To come.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
So that was my wife on the podcast for the first time. I hope you enjoyed listening to it and that you managed to follow the whole conversation. Let us know in the comments section what you think. And feel free to share your own experiences of having children, if you have any. That could be a good way to practice your writing a little bit on the website. Have you had children? What was it like for you? And was your experience similar to ours or different? Do you have any advice for us as new parents? If you don't have any kids, you're obviously welcome to write your comments too. What does it sound like for you? And do you plan on having children one day? Just let us know your thoughts in the comments section. Also, if you have any questions about any of the language which came up, you could ask those questions in the comments section. And that's always a good idea. That's one of the things that the comment section is for. If you missed something in an episode, or if there, you know, you missed a certain phrase, or you heard something and you weren't sure what it was, or you had a question about, for example, how do you pronounce, is it privacy or privacy, for example? Because you heard my wife say privacy, and then a few minutes later I said privacy. So you might have had a question about that. Did you? Did you notice that? I don't know if you did. Well, I can answer that question right now. Privacy is actually the American way of putting it, and privacy is the British way of putting it. Not that my wife speaks American English exactly. I think her English is a bit more British, but there it is, privacy, privacy. I think that also many Brits will say privacy. It's just one of those things that the word can be pronounced privacy or privacy, and that you tend to find the Americans will say privacy and most Brits will say privacy. But that's just an example of a question that you could put in the comments section. And if you ever do that, if you ever ask specific questions about words or phrases that you've heard in episodes, then it really helps if you put a time code with your question. So just check the time at which that particular bit of language comes up in the episode and just include that time code with your question. For example, what did Luke say about blah 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 at about 45 minutes and 30 seconds, for example? That can really help us to answer your questions. It's nice to be back on the podcast, and I'm really looking forward to posting more new episodes in the coming year. 2018 will be the ninth year that I've been doing this podcast. Don't forget to download the Luke's English Podcast app. That's available in the App Store. It's an app just for Luke's English Podcast listeners. And that's where you can find some app-only episodes, as well as all of the other episodes in the archive. You can find some app-only episodes and also some bonus content for a lot of the episodes of this podcast. For example, for episode 501, the bonus content is a little video in which I show you one of the presents that I received for Christmas. If you're wondering where you find the bonus content for each episode, when you're playing the episode, you'll see a few little icons, including a share icon, a favorite icon, a download icon, and a little gift box. If you see the little gift box, press that. That's where you find the bonus content. Also, you should join the mailing list on the website in order to get an email whenever I post something. And that usually means it's a new podcast episode, and you can click the link to take you straight to the page where you'll find notes and stuff. But sometimes it's other content, like, for example, a couple of weeks ago, I posted an episode of the Earful Tower podcast with Oliver G, in which Oliver and I recorded a conversation about the Paris Metro while riding the Paris Metro. And you can find that in the episode archive on my website. But if you're in the mailing list, then you'll already know about it, right? Okay, then, that's it for this episode. I'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.